Welcome to Twos Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Boys.
Hi, Donnie.
Hey, Dean. I noticed you jumped in there first right away. I love that. Yeah, things are good, bud.
See, he cried about it.
What did he say last? What did he say last cast? Do you remember? Oh, why do we have to have an order? Like, I'm not upset. Why do we have to have an order? Somebody's upset.
Yeah,
it's not me. Yeah, right. Whatever. I'm good too.
So, how are you doing, Donnie?
I'm great. Good? I'm great. We should get into it immediately because I know we talked about it offline already. This game last night. For the love of God. Who wants to start?
Not the Oilers.
No. It's already 3-0. It's we're a minute in. It's 3-0. All
okay,
right.
Okay, so I have a theory.
All right.
Want to hear my theory?
I do.
Okay, so what time did the game start last series?
8.
Right. What time did the game start last night?
7:30.
I don't think anybody told the Oilers.
Yeah.
They were a half hour late, almost exactly a half hour late.
Yeah.
Right? Because they do the pre stuff. They probably dropped the puck at about 1:45 by, 43 minutes to the hour. They're down 3-0.
Yeah.
Like what?
The crazy thing is they're still in the game.
Yeah. They came back and tied it, which is ludicrous, but that won't happen again.
No, not at all. And here's the thing. Like, and I'm listening to the coach from the Oilers last night do their thing. And I mean, so if you look at the post-game stuff, and Sutter's like, he's just like, well, whatever. Like, it happened. We got our win. You know, he even made a joke. I don't know if you heard about it. He said, well, people were telling me the Dallas series was so boring, so we thought we'd go out and score a bunch, give up a bunch. Mm-hmm. Right? He made a kind of a joke around that. Whereas Woodcroft is saying, well, we scored 6 even strength goals. That's enough to win. Not when you give up 9.
No.
Right? So at some point, you have to decide that we need to be better. Because I'm part of that team, obviously.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. We need to be better in our own zone.
Right? So what can you do to help?
Well, first off, you don't throw the puck across the middle. I mean, if I need to call in, I will. Mm-hmm. If I need to make a call. I will.
Well, friend of the cast.
I mean, that's defensive zone coverage 101. Did you see, like, so Bouchard's running around, and I get it. He's a rookie.
Right? Not in life, though, just in the NHL. He's played defense.
Well, yeah. He's played the game a couple years, you would think. But, man, hey, how many battles did he lose last night? A ton, right? But
He lost them all.
I got to say, guys and gal, that I lost my marbles every time Nugent Hopkins was on the ice. I even went on the Oilers' social media and said the three things they need to do. A, Nugent Hopkins stays in the dressing room.
Wow.
Don't even bring him out of the dressing room. He's softer than cotton candy. Mm-hmm. Two, somebody needs to be as hard on Johnny Gaudreau as they are on McDavid. Somebody.
Anybody.
I don't care who. Right. And three is they got to show up at puck drop. That's right. It. Those three things, they win the series, I think.
Simple.
Easy game. It's an easy game.
It is an easy game.
It really
game.
Is
right.
an easy game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I lost my marbles a little bit, and I was still upset. Like, I was like, oh, my gosh.
They lollygagged in their own end. They lollygagged at the other end.
You know what that makes them, Dean?
They lollygagged in the neutral zone. What does that make them?
Lollygaggers. One of the things I noticed, so I think Matthew Tkachuk is the worst player ever in terms of getting under people's skin. Man, I wish he was an Oiler. A, so I wouldn't have to watch his antics against us. But what he did to Evander Kane, in my opinion, was terrible. And I put a tweet in, I probably shouldn't have, but I hope.
He lipped when he was in the.
I did. I hope.
He won't even repeat it. It was so bad.
Yeah.
That was so personal, and you read his lips, and it was right on Hockey Night in Canada. And there should be something said, or I'm surprised. I give Evander Kane a lot of credit. Back in the day, it would have been Coho right across the lips after what he was saying in the Coho Silver Fiber, Live 5, right in the mush.
And that's just what he was saying in the penalty box when you're reading lips. And that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it was awful. It's terrible. Terrible.
Ugh. Ugh. And friend of the cast, Peter Loubardius, who will likely come back on. He's obviously pretty busy. I'd love to hear his thoughts. Yeah. Very different view, I'm sure. But
yeah,
Peter is a very objective fella, and I would love to hear what he thought of that. Because I...
Well, yeah, and you got... I mean, deep down, whether he's a Flames fan or not, Peter's a fan of hockey, and I don't think he would. No, that's not right.
He wouldn't.
I don't think that if that was part of the game in the past, then the other part that I mentioned about the cross check to the mush, then that was equally part of the game.
Indeed.
So if you can't have one without the other, I don't think it's just not.
Yeah. I think you're right, Tosh. So are you going to send those notes in to the Oilers, or are we just going to?
I already did.
You did. Hey. Okay.
Yeah, I'm. If you're wondering, it's at Donnie Barrels is what I am now on social media.
Very good. Good. Okay, so you guys got anything on the go this weekend?
Weekend off, Mel. Like, weekend off.
What a rare
weekend off,
time.
Long weekend off. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it all starts. Like, it just, it all starts. But that's the nature of our game, and we wouldn't have it any other way.
It is a fun way to occupy your time, isn't it?
Sure is.
I go to Kelowna. I leave tomorrow.
Yeah.
We have a very favorable draw. Thank you to Rich Haldane, former cast member.
Weird.
Yeah, weird. It's weird, hey? We played 8:45 Friday.
Oh.
Not till 3 on Saturday. And then again at 8 on Saturday. Pretty nice draw. So
that's not bad. Yeah.
Nope, not bad at all. So really looking forward to that. So we'll see.
Who you got in the circle? Who you got in the circle this weekend?
Patty Burns and Zip. Yep. So
that should be
we
okay.
Should be okay. Yeah, I think so. Yep. So
Burnsy back feeling a little better?
I think so. Yeah, like we'll ride Zip probably a little bit more. We just need a couple innings out of Burnsy, but yeah, I think we'll be fine.
We need Burnsy to hit. I mean, what's Zippy now? 18? 19?
Yeah, I don't think he's got his license, if I'm being honest. I think I gotta drive him there. Pack him a juice box and away we go.
Yeah.
He's gonna have lots of energy.
Yeah, he should.
That's right. Oh, he'll be just good. He'll be fine.
Donnie Hood coach.
Our guest out of the bag.
Whoa.
Our guest is talking without the intro.
Where did that come from? I heard a voice.
First time ever.
Hey. Yeah,
the first. Hey, that's okay. Okay, introduce her and then you can ask a question, Donnie.
Okay, I'll go back. Okay, so Jen Salling, thanks for coming on the cast. Jumping on in before we intro. You know, I wanted to do the intro where I wanted to lead in with, I have a wife who's beautiful and a stylist, and she makes my hair look pretty good. And I did my hair today with the knowledge of our guest has very good hair also. And I wanted to try and match up. You know, I wanted, you know, game recognizes game.
Well, and struggling right now. I was struggling.
No, but that's the thing. That it looks... like you intentionally are struggling. That's a good look. You know what I mean? So I love that. So Jen, great hair. Welcome to the cast.
Thanks.
What was your question? Sorry.
Your hair looks great today, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Well done to the wife.
She's amazing. Yep. She's a magician to make me look presentable. So I appreciate that. Okay. What was your question?
Who you coach?
Oh, so I coach the U19s in Lloyd. I coach with the twos, but I'm playing with the Grand Prairie Pirates in Kelowna
this
weekend.
He's still playing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
this is his. Yeah.
I show up.
This is his senior
team going. And we're all right. Yeah. They're all right. I'm there for moral support and warm up bullpens and pinch hit. I'm a treat.
Comic relief.
Yeah, I'm a treat in the gardens. Let me tell you that.
Gel tips.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm more of a glue guy at this point. My best days are clearly behind me, and I'm just gonna ride this one out and see what we do. So yeah.
Wait, with our men's senior team or a club team?
Oh, unfortunately, no. Just a club team that has a bunch of senior team members on it. So
I gotcha. Yeah.
I'm just a guy. You know, you three are Hall of Fames. I'm just a guy who shows up. I'm another one. You know, I'm a link in the chain, if you will. Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So yeah.
Got it.
Our last guest, John Stewart, was on, and he's going to be there, and we're going to have a chance to catch up. And I've asked him, I've asked Tosh, I've asked anybody, if you want a guy to come in and throw belt high dippers in that 52, 53 range, just to get everyone feeling really good about their swing, I'm your guy. So just let me know if you ever need that.
Maybe we'll have to get you in touch with Kaylee.
Oh, there we've had her on a couple times.
Oh, he's been begging for that job.
Well, begging. I don't know about begging. I mean, I've mentioned it. Would it be nice? Sure, it would be nice. it's an honor to wear the Leaf, even in BP, you know? It'd be fantastic. So
we can always use belt-high dippers.
Oh, who can't, right? Because if you can't hit that, you're in big trouble. And I'm a feel-good BP kind of guy.
Perfect.
So a quick sidebar. So when we went to Vegas, for example, Dean Holein, well known for having a very, very, very difficult to hit rise ball. So he lined up on my right side and I was beside him and Ray's was on the other side. Dean threw nothing but rise balls and he's throwing cage balls and they're still jumping 2 feet and I'm throwing belt high dippers. The issue is when you throw a belt high dipper and there's three hitters in the front of the plate, the other two pitchers, it is an absolute turkey shoot. You have to be really aware of who's swinging. And hey, did Donnie hang one? And poor Razor's picking up his hat. He's diving everywhere. He looked like MacGyver out there, just barrel rolling out of the way. But the girls come out of that with a lot of confidence, boys. So I did my job there, I felt.
Perfect.
Well done. Yeah. Well done.
Maybe we'll have you in before we have a big event. How's
that? Please. Yeah. If you want to just get the sticks hot, let me know. I'm available on request. Yep. So, Jen, where do you want to start? Thanks for coming on, by the way.
Thanks for having me on. I've seen a lot of the 222s marketing via social media. So I've been very intrigued about the podcast. And you've also had folks on there that I hold near and dear to my heart. So this is cool.
Yes. And we've enjoyed all of them. I mean, obviously, we're going to get into your Olympic story as well. We had Mark Smith on 3 times. He actually had a story about a conversation he had with you leading into the last cycle that was pretty powerful, and we're going to touch on that, obviously, but get us into how you got into ball. Let's start there.
I started when I was 5 years old, so like 29 years ago now, and my dad was a men's fast pitch catcher, and I was just around the field, like, since then, but I think I was apparently around the field a lot earlier than 5 years old. I was all of 2 weeks old. It's actually kind of crazy. Foul ball was hit. I was in a stroller when I was like 2 weeks old at one of my dad's games. And my mom like leaned over the stroller, the bassinet part of the stroller. And she thought she had covered me, which she did make full effort to. But I guess the ball ended up landing right next to my head. And here we are still to this day. So it somehow slipped over her shoulder and landed right in the bassinet. But
so next to your noggin, not on your noggin?
Yeah, next to the noggin.
Weird how that happens, you know? Like, kids very rarely, knock on wood, get hurt at the park.
Foul balls never hit kids or old people. Yeah. So you're good, Dino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Weirdly dodged it, but anyways, so rest was history after that. Wow.
Okay, and who'd your dad play for? Do you remember?
He played, honestly, they were called the Edmonton Oilers. That was one of the teams, but they were from Vancouver area. The team that I really remember him being on, they were called the Vancouver Thunderbirds. Played with a guy with named Wayne King for a lot of years. Actually, Coach Stewart knows my dad through fast pitch. But yeah, that's the team that I remember him being on, playing on, majority of my childhood.
I remember a Thunderbirds team out there. I think they were in the Surrey League back in the day. I don't know if it's the same Thunderbirds, but.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just pause for a second. 14 minutes in, Dean remembers a team name. That is usually a fact.
Well, I don't know if it's the right team, but
No. Don't dismiss. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thanks, Donnie.
Yeah, no, I've got your back, Dean. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so can we talk a little bit about you're now a left-handed hitter.
Yes.
And you were not always a left-handed hitter.
Correct.
When did you switch?
She wasn't until she got the ball in the head when she was a little baby. She was a righty, and then all of a sudden she was a lefty.
Yeah. I grew up right-handed, threw right-handed, hit right-handed. And then when I was 11, that's when I really started playing – like ret ball. The coach that I had at the time, Paul Langford, he suggested I move over to the left side because I used to be pretty quick, pretty fast. And then from 11 on, I stuck with the left side. So I originally started as like a slapper, a short gamer. And then as I kind of grew up, I became more of a power hitter and slapped situationally. But yeah, it was a fun challenge.
I suppose mm-hmm. it is. Tosh, mm-hmm. you've done that with a few of our kids as well and said, hey, maybe you're left-handed and you should try and hit that way and do that.
No, maybe
not exactly that.
I think it's a different context yeah. where they swing yeah. right-handed and you go, maybe you're lefty. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just used to being told what I've heard.
I think you got the emphasis on the wrong syllable. That's all
my
emphasis. That's all it is. Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I sometimes have the disease of hearing what I want to hear, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So who'd you play with in minor on the coast?
I grew up playing for the same organization my whole life, the Port Coquitlam Ravens. I played house ball in Port Coquitlam and then started played rep ball, starting with Poco Ravens at 11, stuck with them my whole entire career in travel ball. And then if we didn't make nationals, I was fortunate enough to be picked up by whether it be Serious Storm or the White Rock Renegades. But I stuck with Poco my whole entire life. And I'm actually very proud to say that, because I came across a lot of really wonderful coaches and more specifically some really awesome teammates that were older than me that like helped make me like significantly better, because I did always play up in my travel ball career.
So I got a question. So Poco Ravens, do they still exist?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. They actually do still exist. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of teams. I want to say there may be roughly four teams now, and it's a B organization.
Okay.
So in the past, it was A and B. Now right. It's just B, but they do still exist.
You just led me into something really cool. Dino actually played for the Poco Ravens in senior A. They had a senior A men's team, but they were actually a B team too.
He's such a loser.
That was awesome.
No, but that was because the first year you guys, was that the very first year you
went? We went from Regents and then we changed the name from New West and we went out to Poco. And I was wondering where the Ravens name came from. Like, not exactly sure if it's tied somehow. Maybe it must be. But I never heard of the Ravens prior to them coming up with our team name. So,
that's cool. Cool.
I don't know if it's a Port Coquitlam thing, because Terry Fox High School, our mascot, is a raven. So I don't know if there's some sort of thing with that. Bob Buchan did, I think he started the Port Coquitlam Ravens organization. I don't know. He would be somebody to ask about that. But the Terry Fox thing rings a bell for me as far as the Ravens go and why that would be chosen. But because his high school originated here in Poco.
There you go. So you played all your travel ball career, and obviously we have a travel ball program, and one of the goals is to get our kids to school or help them get to school. So talk a little bit about your journey from travel ball into NCAA.
Yeah, Canada Cup was the big one for me. Grew up going to that tournament, watching our national team play, and then also grew up going and playing in it myself with the Port Coquitlam Ravens. And at that time, there was a lot of scouts. Like, there's probably like, I remember one year, there's probably like 150 scouts from all levels of schools in the United States going to that tournament, all the way from junior college, NEI, Div 3, Div 2, Div 1. And that's where Kathy Aronson, head coach of University of Oregon, recruited me. And then that was my junior year, and rest was history after that. I had no idea that you could play college in the United States or play softball in the United States and potentially get your school paid for or even some sort of funding towards your education. I had no clue.
Oregon's a big program too. It's not like you know what I mean? Like, that's a huge nod. But we have, we've had some, and I'm going to bring her up, Dion, who I love. When she talked about her recruiting process, it was on a VHS tape.
Yeah,
Bonnie, she is gonna kill you. You've said that three or four times.
Yeah. Hard not to keep bringing it up
all over you.
Because dude, she carries a gun for a living. Like, what are you doing?
I honestly don't know. I was just trying to segue into how was this the only interaction you had with this coach, or did you send tape? Did you what was your process like going to that school?
Shout out to Dion, by the way. I love her. She was one of my teammates in 2008 at the Beijing Olympics. And actually, just being in Saskatoon last week, she surprised us and said hello. So hi to Dion.
Thanks for saving me there. Thank you. Very good.
Yeah. Remind me of your question again.
What was your So the coach saw you at Canada Cup, which is a great tournament for sure. Yeah. Did you do anything beyond that, or they just saw you and said, "Hey, you're really good. We'd like you to move to Oregon." And
yes, all the bells and whistles that exist nowadays between video and camps and lessons and all the things, I did none of that. So the first time I was seen was in person at the Canada Cup by the Oregon coaching staff. They had no clue who I was. They didn't have any sort of skill content of me whatsoever. They just saw me in person.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
The old-fashioned way.
Yes. Old, definitely very different than we know it to be now. Yes.
Yeah, no kidding.
So you want to talk about your first year in Oregon? Because I got some stats here that are eye-popping.
Hey, it's powerful when you don't have a lot of information and you're just letting her rip.
First, you played 1 year in Oregon and you transferred to Washington. So two very big, that was Pac-10 back then, I assume?
Yep.
Two big schools. But in Oregon, you hit 481. You hit 14 home runs. You were a finalist, top 10 USA Softball College Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. Pretty good first year. You can talk about your year in Oregon, and then if you want to talk about why you went to Washington, what was the reasoning? Was it a better school? Just like the uniforms better, which is hard to believe because Oregon has pretty flashy duds. But yeah, pretty big year. So what do you want to talk about? Why did you go?
Honestly, so my very first year out of high school, I redshirted. So I did not play. I just watched, learned, observed, asked questions, was in and around the environment. I was actually able to travel too, which was really wonderful because a lot of times redshirting in softball, you can redshirt and just kind of stay at home while the team's traveling, doing their thing. So our coaching staff actually, like, I was in it all. I just wasn't actually playing. So I really accredit that year for my second year. My second year, meaning my actual freshman year when I did play. I learned a lot, saw a lot, was around it a lot. So I think that played a really big role in doing what I was able to do in my actual freshman year.
I think it's cool. You touched on the fact that you redshirted, Jen, because, I mean, it just goes to show we have a lot of kids over the last few years that have gone down to college, and I think they're frustrated, to say the least, right, with the fact that they don't get to play maybe that first year or their limited time, and it's hard to handle that. And it's coming from somebody who's one of the best softball players in the world. You had to redshirt as well. You know, so it's not like, and I know, you know, difference of colleges makes a big difference too, but, you know, it's just nice to see, and hopefully a message to some of our kids that are out there down at colleges to hang in there, you know, like it's gotta be grueling. Cause you know, you were probably one of the best players on your team before you went up, you know, down to college, and you're in that 3 or 4 hole. And then all of a sudden, poof, you're not playing anymore. Right. So I know you're practicing, you're working hard, but it's a good message to our kids down there to kind of hang in there.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, it's like redshirting, it's not a bad thing, right? Like coaches are doing it and choosing to do it for an athlete for a reason. And I think a lot of it is development. A lot of it is an opportunity and time for you to be comfortable, to learn the system, learn the way, and learn the culture that you're going into. So I guess I challenge the girls who have an opportunity to redshirt or ask being redshirt to kind of look at it in a little bit of a different light. Like it's a very positive thing for your softball future. Cause practicing with intent is fun. You know, like if you can actually choose to, in regards to your practice and the time that you actually do have, which redshirting gives you, be very intentional with that time. It's so helpful for your future in softball.
It brings up, we had Grace Poland on, who is an alumni of our program, and she had the same message. And her team in Oklahoma City just punched their ticket to their tournament. Mm. So, but she had the same, she was arguably one of the best hitters, the best fielders, just a hard worker. And she's gone down there and she's had to learn to be a different, play a different role. And it is only hopefully for her first year, because she is still, her message though was unbelievable.
So good.
So to hear it from a 19-year-old and then hear it from an Olympian is the same message. I hope that resonates with our listeners, which went up, by the way. We've got more listeners every week. Yeah. Yeah. So I forgot to mention this in the intro because I got excited. But of course, the Twos are putting on a tournament in Lloyd. And we got another sponsor for the tournament, Jeremy at Lloyd Mr. Nissan, who's a great guy, really big in supporting local sports. But he was actually farming, helping a buddy, which is a great, by the way, like who just volunteers to seed. But I asked him about it and he said, "Oh, Donnie, geez, I'm busy. I haven't had a chance to look at it. I've been on the tractor and blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Oh, if you're bored, tune into our podcast." So he did. Another listener. So one by one, I will reach out to people and we'll get listeners. But Jeremy, he jumped in as a sponsor, which is awesome.
I thought farmers get in the tractor to do their emails, because isn't everything just automatic now?
It's they GPS just sit there. Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way they go, read books.
Yeah.
Watch Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why you're even there. You're more of a passenger, not a operator. You're just a passenger.
Something blows out, you throw water on it.
You're there because if your GPS, you know, obviously takes you into a sinkhole or into wet, then you get stuck. Somebody's got to call.
Right.
Right.
Or else that thing just sits there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, guy like Sean Colburn, might be the easiest job on the planet.
That's why he gets so many emails and he keeps texting us all the time.
Yeah. He's the busiest non-busy guy on the earth.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Good for
sure.
Him. Yep. Total sidebar. Sorry. I got distracted there.
Sorry, Don.
Yeah.
No. Okay. So then you go to Washington. Tell us about that, because there's a pretty big, you got a pretty big year in 09. Mm-hmm. You can go ahead and tell
I mean, after the Olympics, although I had a really wonderful freshman year, the Olympics came. And then after the Olympics, I honestly fell in some, probably like a little bit of like mental health stuff, like depression. I got super sad and felt super lonely going back to Eugene. I think just being on such an Olympic high in 2008, Eugene's a very, very small town, and it can be rainy, it can be dark in the fall, and I think I wasn't ready to kind of go back to that environment yet after the Olympics. So my parents and I, we did everything that we could, tried to do some sports psychology, some counseling, and, you know, we tried and tried and tried. Coaching stuff was wonderful to try to keep me, and nothing was really keeping me. I couldn't figure out how to be happy there. So I ended up transferring. Loved my experience at Oregon, though. I loved the, it was all good. I just wasn't happy there after the Olympics. So I left, and I will say it was transferring to Washington was the best decision I could have ever made.
So I guess we skipped something. Sorry. We have the luxury of having a two-time Olympian. You can compare. We can talk about Beijing a little bit if you want, because obviously there's a Dion tie in there who we love, and Kaylee and Danielle. There's a few there. So, I mean, if you want to talk about the trip to Beijing, what it meant to your transfer and then into your next leg of your journey, which is another big one, which – I can't wait to hear about. So please.
The loaded so much. I was 21 in 2008, so very, very young. Shortstop, batted in the middle of the lineup. Very fast forward to 13 years later, now 34, being a first baseman. So very, very different experiences at the Olympic Games. And the 08 experience, I think, was the kickstart to how I behaved and how I rolled essentially in my preparation for myself and our team in this last Olympic cycle. Kaylee and I, we've been teammates since 2007. Her first year on the team was in 2007. I started in 2006. So we have a lot of experience together as teammates, and now we're in this next journey together on our coaching staff, which we're super excited about, with Tosh as well. Super passionate about growing the game, developing the game, and very intentional about how we go about that. So the future of softball is super bright in our country. So I'm super excited about that. Now, sorry, there's a lot of things in there. The Washington piece.
This is awesome.
No, it's
somebody
true.
Else is forgetting stuff, and it's not like you can't bug me, and nobody's bugging Jen.
Well,
no
I
way,
asked
man.
Her four questions
Ooh,
at
let's
once.
Let's ask her another question another way.
A lot of questions there.
I mostly wanted to hear about how was different between other than your age, your experience in the Olympics and from Beijing to Tokyo.
Fans to no fans, Beijing, Tokyo. I mean, age was obviously a very big thing. Like, I was only on the national team for 2 years at that point. At this point, I've been on the national team for about 15 years. So just a lot of different factors going into, like, what makes the experience so different, but so cool. Beijing, the coolest part about the Olympic Games, I think, is the village. The village is like, just, there's so much personality. There's so much culture. There's so much diversity. There's people there who are just the best at what they do. And everyone's like all about what's something that's bigger than them. So the feel in the village is just so, you can't even really describe it. Those two things, very similar, 08, 2021, the village piece, very, very similar. Just obviously looks different because the location's different. culturally also a little bit different. I would go back to Tokyo in a minute. And if you ever get a chance to go to Japan, 1,000%, go to Japan.
I have to ask because I ask every guest, which food was better?
Tokyo, okay. Japan. Yeah. I really like Japan. Our whole team loved Japan. Our staff loved Japan. It's a very, very clean. The culture is absolutely wonderful. They're so respectful. They're very, very welcoming, super hospitable. They just make you feel like you're one of them while you're there. And it's so pretty. Like, there's water, there's mountains, there's trees. It's maybe a little bit different than Saskatoon.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Isn't parting shots at the end? You know?
Yeah. maybe we've got the mayor of Saskatoon on now. What would you like to say? Really? Yeah.
But no, yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful country. And the people are just wonderful.
So we've had the luxury of having, you know, obviously several guests that have been part of the last go around here in Japan with you. And I'm curious to we heard how prepared you guys were and how tight you were as a group. How does that compare to your 08 experience? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know you were younger, so it'd probably seem a lot different, but were you guys as tight then, or was this group so much tighter and that's why, you know, we walked away with a medal? Or, you know, what do you attribute some of that to?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Dean, I think I was only on the team at that point for a couple years. So it was hard to kind of build connection for me personally. But I also, in this last go around, one of our core values was connection. And we had some serious amount of time to really kind of dig deep within ourselves to figure out who we were, what we brought to the team, and also learning that about other people. And there was also some really, really valuable resources that Coach Smith put in place for us to like figure that out, whether it be figure that out individually or collectively as a team. So I do think we had time to figure out what does connection mean to Team Canada softball, but we like genuinely also like love each other. Like, we really care about each other. We really value one another. Everybody respects each other, and there was no, like, I've been on the team for 13 years and you've been on the team for 4 years. You're an equal, right? Like,
one for all. Yeah,
exactly. Like, it was me, Kaylee, Danielle, and Lauren, right? Like, we were like, there was like the veterans, so to speak, meaning like people who had been in Olympics before. And there was like Emma Ensminger, who had only been on the team for like 3-4 years, but like Emma felt so comfortable coming to talk to me and Lauren and Danielle and Kaylee. And, you know, so I think part of it too was the veterans and the leaders really made, like, I would say the younger ones feel equal. and the same. And regardless of years of experience, you bring just as much value, if not more value, than some of the older ones.
Important to note for our listeners who don't have the video, Jenna's used air quotes several times, and I do enjoy it. Your use of air quotes is second to none, Jen. Hey, so you enjoyed your time in Japan, yeah?
I did, yeah.
Are you ready for a bit of a tire pump here? Okay.
Sure.
Your Olympics, you hit 571. Hit a home run in your first game. 928 slugging, 6 walks, 5 RBIs, 2 doubles. And you broke Lisa Fernandez's record for batting average at the Olympics. And Lisa Fernandez, and I'm going to date myself here, coming up, her name was on every bat and every glove and everything to do with ball. And that's you now. So, yeah, that's not a bad week.
I
wish I had a bat with my name on it. I wish I had a ball with my name on it.
You should have them now. I would argue that you should make a stern fax to the people at Easton or Louisville and say, perhaps you'd like to update that. But big name, obviously, and you had a fantastic Olympics. I want to ask you, and we've had different opinions and different insights on this. Bronze medal game, obviously, it was a huge one. Danielle is pitching in the seventh, and there's a pitch count. Then she's got to get a pitch in, and it's a changeup. And what were you thinking at first as that whole thing? If you can collect yourself, because I imagine that must have been your heart must have been
racing.
Throw
the flipping ball.
It's just like, honestly, what went through my mind is that the person, if there's anybody that can deal with something like that, like poop hitting the fan on the biggest stage of the world, it was her.
Watching,
she's somebody that, like, you playing behind her, you know that, like, you're safe, you're protected, and she's gonna do whatever she possibly can to help to win that moment. Like, her competitiveness is just nothing like I've ever seen before. And this is not me just like saying this, like I'm not like blowing smoke to her, but like she yearns for those moments. Like, she wants to be in those moments, and her competitive nature is you don't come across it really, especially in female athletics. And especially, I mean, speaking for the sport of softball, like, her personality is really, really rare. So experiencing that, I'm like, dang, I'm glad she's on the mound right now. We're good.
The thing I found most intriguing about that was, as a belt high dipper pitcher who's been on the mound in some struggles, her face stayed perfectly calm. Like, you wouldn't, if you just looked at a shot of her, you would never know that the situation she was in was very, very, very tense. She looked calm, very calm. And I got to tell you, even watching it, I had like anxiety tears. So I applaud. It must have been an amazing feeling to watch that ball fall in and the medal. Like, I can't imagine what you went through in that 3 minutes of time.
Yeah, that was just a whoa. Like, honestly, that's all I have to say. It's like, that was a whoa. But like, I do feel like in my heart of hearts, as nerve-wracking as that felt, and Danielle will say that's the most nervous she's ever been in her entire softball career, in her entire life. And I honestly probably could say the same, but they always ask, like, how do you trust yourself in the moment? And the only thing you have to go off of is preparation. That's the only thing that you have to go off. And I will say, in that moment, I'm like, we are so much more prepared than Team Mexico right now. I said, there's no, like, in my brain, I was like, there's no way we're losing this game. I said, somebody's going to be on our side. The universe is going to take care of us because of all that how hard we've worked. And we're not going to come out of this moment like not being on top. Like, it just felt like that because of the 5 years leading up to it. Mm-hmm. Mexico didn't prepare like that. So you don't deserve to win in those moments, and you don't deserve to be able to execute in those moments.
There you go. But
they have nice speeches.
Yeah, they do. And let's stay on that topic just for a sec, because I want to get your take. You know, like we said, we've had other Olympians on, but I think individual experiences might vary just a tick, and I just want to climb inside your head a little bit here. Mm-hmm. The year that wasn't. So you guys are working your butts off to get to where you need to get to, and then all of a sudden we hit the pause button. What was the first few moments that you had leading up to, you know, that realization that it's not going to happen this summer? How did you handle that?
Like in 2019?
Yeah.
I think upon reflection, when there was pressure in that Mexico game, we started like going like this as a team. Like we started like running from it, whether it be individually and collectively. It didn't feel like we were like leaning in when things were getting real tough. So I do think because of that, we started leaning in more to like connecting when crap is hitting the fan, because that's what we're going to face at the Olympic Games. Because if our go-to and pressure-filled moment is to get internal and freak out and get scared of the moment, we're not going to get the result that we want. So kind of leaning more individually into being the one to execute, whether it be the offensive person, the defensive person, the pitcher, whatever it is, leaning more into that and owning like, this pressure isn't going away, so we either figure it out and lean into it, or we run from it. Like it's our choice at that point.
So that brings, that's a great point, because you know, and then Coach Smith brought it up when we had him on. He felt that because the Olympics was paused for that year, and you guys had another year, it actually helped you guys in that regard, because it was an opportunity for you guys to become closer, to do those things and grow as a team. Would you concur with that?
I would, yes. Yeah. I would say the COVID year definitely gave us more time to dig a little deeper individually and collectively on what do we need to figure out from a mindset standpoint, individually and physically. How can we dig a little bit deeper to maximize what we bring to the team? So as crappy as it was to get the news about the postponement, and honestly scary because we were the first country to step away, because it wasn't certain that it was going to be in, like that was a risk. With that being said, I think we genuinely took the time to take advantage of the time.
Right? Yeah, because everybody had the same opportunity. It was just you guys took advantage of it.
Yes. I mean, we did things like, our mental performance coach had us do like a visualization week of the Olympic Games. And even just like 1 week of doing that was so powerful. Like it just helps keep you in the zone, right? And there's follow-ups about that experience and stuff like that that we have with the staff and as a group, like small group discussions and whatnot. But we visualized each week we had a game. So in total, I think we had 7 games or 6 games in the Olympics. So that's roughly like 6-7 weeks. Each week we played a country and we had to, as soon as we got up in the morning, what would our morning routine be? What would our game day routine be? Then you visualize the game. Then you do your post game routine. So you're in the zone. So that's like a month and a half of stuff, right?
That's just like your Pirates, Donnie. You guys do the same thing, right?
Yes, it sounds very similar to how we prepare for most of our assignments. And
yeah. So Donnie, when you think about your post game and you're walking into the beer gardens, what are you thinking at that point?
Mostly I'm thinking, do I get a bucket for the fellas or just take care of myself? And I have to make that decision pretty quickly.
That's so hilarious.
So Jen, I wanted to ask, and this I could be way off base here, but when the news came that there was a pause, did you consider not continuing? Was there ever a moment where you're like, you know what, maybe this is a sign? And if so, did you have a conversation with anyone named Mark Smith who may have wooed you back into what your role would be on the team? Because Mark did mention there was a good chat.
So as far as the postponement, that was a different. So the postponement, I did have a moment where I'm like, holy crap, you're going to put your body through this again. So like COVID, we all kind of like, that was scary for all of us. That was the postponement part. But as far as training for another Olympic cycle, that was after the summer of 2017. And had a real tough summer from a performance standpoint. I was in grad school at the University of Washington from 2015 to 2017. So my priorities were being a staff member to Coach Tarr, serving the program, and like being a coach essentially. So training for Team Canada softball was very, very low on the list of priorities. And so going into the summer, I had a really, really tough summer. Performance was terrible, absolutely terrible. So Coach Smith pretty much told me, he said, you know, JSL, if you want to give this another Olympics a run, we've got to make some decisions here, because there's some young girls coming up here that are essentially going to take your spot if you don't figure it out. So either poop or get off the pot, pretty much, for the lack of a better term. So following grad school, September 2017, I trained full time until July 29th of 2021, and that was my job.
Actually, the other people we've had on, you know, Jenna and Kaylee and Joey, and it was alarming to hear them talk about, let's just say Florida even. So now we're getting closer to, but the work you guys had to put in and the thought put into it by the coaching staff to put you in an environment where the air is going to be a little thicker and a little humid, and we have to push through the heat and we have to train our bodies. And I don't think there's any doubt, and I think Mark might have said it, was there was no team in the Olympics in better shape and better prepared to face that condition than you guys. So, you know, the funny part, well, it's not funny, it's you've trained for years for a week's worth of games. And wow. Like the commitment, I don't know if people realize, we make jokes about my team going to the beer gardens, I get it. But I don't know if people realize that the commitment you got to put into your life and switch all your focus to just training, to just eating properly, to being in shape, to staying ready for that long. Is you all, we've said it to everybody that's come on, you need to be applauded for that, because the work ethic is second to none.
Thank you. Yeah, it's once you make that decision to like do it and go for it, regardless of what the outcome is, you're almost like, you almost enter this world of just like nothing can get in your way. Nobody, no human, no potential opportunity to make money can even get in your way to like, what is the mission? Like, and that's to win a medal for our country. And it, you know, it got to a point where the last couple of years of our training cycle, everyone was doing it full time. You know, there was a lot of sacrifices that were made, whether it's Danielle and Lauren being moms, leaving their families, financially, there's some serious sacrifice that goes on with us. People are choosing to not take on financial opportunity to train full time. It's a full time job. People don't really understand it, and it's fine, but it's like a full day's work, right? You got to take care of your body. And Coach Smith was very, very much about fitness, period. Like, he beep tests, you had to meet a certain standard. Trap bar, we had to lift 1.7 times our body weight off the ground, or you did not make the team. So, like, there's like some serious things in place physically that people need to achieve to make the Olympic roster. So you have to take care of your body to be able to achieve those goals. But yeah.
Boys, any chance we could lift 1.7 times our body weight off the ground?
Well, I was going to say
1000%. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, no, I'm going to say no. Mm-hmm. but as far as Coach Smith, because Dino and I played for Coach Smith, right? Because he had the men's program before he came over to the women's program, and he was all about fitness then, and Dino knows about that with the beep test. You know, you got to get to a certain
it's really level. Tough. Yeah
it is.
It's the only time I've seen the beep test run where one person was running one way and everybody else was going the other way,
but I didn't stop.
But you didn't stop. That's good. Amazing. Because you couldn't.
They were telling me, you're done. And I just kept going. I just kept going. And I just crumpled up into the corner. And it was a tough day.
Yeah.
This 1.7 times your body, you have to just pick it up off the ground? Or is it like go over your head? Or what are we doing with
it? So whatever you weigh.
Right.
To make our team, you take your weight, your body weight, times that by 1.7. Mm-hmm. Then you have to pick up that weight off the ground with the trap bar.
Like just a deadlift.
Yeah.
Oh, I could do that one time probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to go to the hospital after, but I could do it.
Yeah.
Yikes. I just did mine.
You can do it in one rep. You could do it in two, or you could do it in three. But it had to. You had to minimum. You had to go 1.7 times your body weight.
Wow. The only time being short and square has helped me are in things like deadlifting or bench pressing. I don't have to move it very far, so it's impressive.
And I would imagine they would make us get on the scale first too to make sure our weight is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you couldn't get on.
What do you weigh? 175.
Yeah, 175.
Well, my driver's license says 160, so let's go in there and try one leg.
Yeah, one leg.
We'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about winning a national title with Washington, with the with college softball going into their tournament now. Can you talk a bit about what that experience was for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream that any college athlete of any level hopes to achieve, right? Like winning a national championship is, it's the coolest thing I think you can do in college from an athletic standpoint. And it was a little bit of a unique situation for me because I came in the middle of the season. I came in on April 1st because I was redshirting. There's two rules that I had to follow after transferring from Oregon. I had to redshirt, which the Olympic year did that. And then I did not get a release from our coaching staff. So I had to go and get 26 credits from a junior college to transfer into University of Washington. So the fall and the winter quarters, I was at actually North Seattle Community College, right up from University of Washington, gathering those credits so I could then enroll in the school in the spring. So I came in April 1st and then Pac-10 started and then postseason, and then we ended up winning. But, you know, I did the best that I could coming in the middle. You know what I mean? And, again, academics were my priority. So softball did take a hit. I remember, like, running. I was 0 for 12 when I first got into the season or got into the team. I was, like, running down the first baseline, and I was like, my quads are, like, going to die right now. I was pretty weak. Because after the Olympics, it was straight into school, right? No softball, just how can I get into University of Washington? But the girls, I mean, they were wonderful. Coach Tar communicated really well to the team what the plan was. I think the girls were really excited. Danielle and I are very close. So I think there was a lot of, like, good energy and, like, morale around coming in. So I feel grateful for that because things were very seamless. And then we took home our first ever national championship. So from my end, I was doing the best that I could coming in the middle. And, you know, did some cool things for the team to help us win in the end at shortstop, did some, you know, pretty clutch defensive plays, but it was fun. It was fun.
Who'd you beat?
Florida Gators.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty intense.
I will say, you guys did a lot for shining a light on softball for sure, mm-hmm. for the national team. And now mm-hmm. there's a lot, like Danielle herself is doing some commentating. Amanda mm-hmm. Scarborough, there's a few of those that are mm-hmm. doing TV and play-by-play, and there's way more coverage mm-hmm. just for the average person like me to follow along with tournaments and championships and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Any future for you in the broadcast game? Because we can segue now into, because if you can believe it, we're almost at an hour. But I want to kind of get into what you're doing now. Obviously, you mentioned you're coaching with Tosh and with Kaylee and with the national team. But what are you doing now, and would you want to broadcast in the future?
If I was asked to do some broadcasting stuff, I would be open to the opportunity to do it. It's not something I personally try to seek out necessarily, but if the opportunity arose for whatever reason, I would be open to it. I wouldn't say it's like my niche, but it'd be fun to try. But my niche is player development. I love coaching, I love developing, and I love teaching and impacting. Because honestly, it's all I've really ever been around. University of Washington, Coach Tar's huge on development. She's huge on fundamentals. She's huge on, like, owning your process to becoming a very successful softball player. So with that being said, I just have completely immersed myself in, like, developing myself. And now I have, like, a serious passion for, like, sharing my experiences and how I found to be super, super helpful in my career and passing it along to whether it be coaches or players now.
Jen, let's be honest. Your hair would play well on TV. So if that ever is a factor, keep that in mind.
Thanks. I actually have a haircut tomorrow. It's getting a little long. You need to clean it up on the sides, but thanks.
No, it's sharp. Real sharp. Okay, so
there's that. Sorry, Donnie. I was just going to say just that segue into the coaching thing, and I know that you know, Jen, you've had experience in the past collegiately and now at the national team. I just wanted to say that you actually took the path that most take. You go from middle infield to wearing the big glove to getting off the field and standing in the box. Right? So your progression has gone exactly the way you're supposed to go. Just go to that side of the field. Hilarious. Stand over there.
Yeah, yes. That's awesome. Yeah. I never even thought of it like that. But yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Stand over there now.
Stand over there and give me your glove back. Yeah.
So how do things look? Where are you guys at in your process for, I know you guys were in Saskatoon there last week, but kind of what's whereabouts are you at in your process?
So we just finished our BCID camp. We now will have an Ontario ID camp before our final selection camp. So one athlete has come out of Saskatoon camp. We have two athletes that have come out of BC so far. One is not confirmed. So far we could potentially have four total athletes that have come out of our ID camps, and then we still have Ontario to do.
Are we allowed to talk about the Saskatoon athlete?
Is that?
Are we allowed to?
Probably not.
No. Okay. I wasn't sure.
I'm guessing. Let's guess.
I don't know if we're allowed to name her yet. Tosh, what are your thoughts?
I don't know if it's official yet. I have talked to said athlete and she knows, but I don't know if it can be officially announced yet. So maybe we'll save that, Donnie.
Sure. No, I didn't want to. I'm glad we had this chat before I just blabbed, which is generally what I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool kid. Awesome. Yeah. She was wonderful. And then we'll have Ontario and then final selection camp, and then we'll roll all until the third week of July. But there's a lot of like cool stuff in the works. Tosh knows a bit about it too. Our whole coaching pool, Kaylee, myself, Joey, Tosh, Lonnie, Coach Jones, Melissa, Finley, like we care so much about the sport of softball and developing the sport of softball, athletes and coaches. So I think the direction is really, really exciting of the things that we could potentially be doing for our folks.
It is a lot of fun. It's a fun staff. Like the little that we've been together so far has been lots of laughs and lots of, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very busy summer for sure. And you're used to that, right? You're used to starting and rolling. Like, it's much like a club team. This is your team. This is your team for the summer. And you're going to go to these different events, but it's going to be, from that final camp through to the end of Birmingham, it's going to be a whirlwind, which, you know, obviously Jen is used to doing, but it's going to be neat. And I think the real cool thing right now is that there's so much opportunity right now for players that are looking to become part of that roster because there's a mass retirement, right? So half the team pretty much has to be replaced. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really cool to be a little piece of that process. That's for sure. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, Jen. Honestly, it's been an hour. Thank you so much for everything. We told you offline. You get to pick or defer. Do you want to do your shot? And I know, looking at your face, you haven't planned a shot, have you? So if you want to wait and go last, you can.
Okay, I'll go last.
Okay, good.
She has a shot already.
I bet she's probably going to have it pretty quick. Dino?
Yeah. No, I got no shot because I'm not going to talk about the Calgary airport. I haven't been on another trip in the last week. So I'm going to – and I'll wait till they get back to me because I did send in my little
– Oh, no, didn't.
At Donnie Barrels.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'll forward that on to you. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. And but I haven't heard back. So, yeah, a little disappointed to say the least.
So
but
weird.
I'll wait till we actually fly through Calgary again before I – you know, make another, then the Oilers, we've already talked about that. So, I'm really happy. Right. Thanks for Jen for coming on. Cause I know once it's all done, I don't get to say anything anymore. So thank you very much for coming on. It was a pleasure to get to talk with you a little bit for sure. Look forward to seeing you in the future.
Well, thanks for hanging in. I know you're not feeling very good. So thank you.
Thank you.
You're a champ, Dino. Tosh, you want to go? Cause I have an airport rip myself.
Do you?
I do. Ooh.
You know what? I'm just going to stay on theme. First off, second off, third off, the Oilers need to be better. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like and it's funny too because I spent the better part of a half an hour answering text messages from all my Flames buddies last night after the game. And what was really cool is this: knowing the firepower that the Oilers have, I didn't hear anything from anybody, even when it's 3 Cobb. I heard nothing until the final horn, right? Because the game started to go and nobody wanted to be that one where you start popping off too early and karma bites you in the ass, right? So through my conversations last night with all of my buddies, they did gloat a little bit, and yes, they are up 1-0, but I don't think either team can be proud of that. You know, like, that is not a second round playoff game. Was it entertaining? Kinda. If you're watching U13C hockey, I mean, it was awful. There was no puck responsibility. I think the Oilers need to be tougher in their own zone. I think somebody needs to be as tough on Gaudreau and Tkachuk as they are on McDavid. And I think they need to show up on time. Do I think it'll be different tomorrow night? Absolutely. I think it'll be different. I think you can't rip Smith for that performance. I mean, he wasn't very good, but he'll come out. And what happened the last time he got ripped?
He went on
a run.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just went out and I believe he shut the Kings out the next game.
He did. Yeah.
Did he not? Yeah. So I look for him to have a bit of a bounce back. But I really believe that there's got to be a garbage can, and maybe not at the NHL level, but Woodcroft's got to go into that room and say something about being a little tougher on their skilled guys, just like they are McDavid. That's there.
Are you referring to Letterkenny's coach where he kicks the garbage can and says it's embarrassing?
Is that embarrassing. What
it's embarrassing.
Yes. Yeah, something like that. I think it'll be better. I that's my shot, though. They just, it's just got to be. That wasn't very good. So,
okay. Well, I appreciate that. My shot goes out to, it's a bit of a dog's breakfast. So Rich Haldane tells me, come in on Thursday to Kelowna. Sounds good, Rich. Yeah. Then I message Millie. Hey, Millie, do we have accommodations set up for Thursday? And not only did I not hear from Millie, when I did finally, the answer was no. So I would have been there by myself. So tough. So I changed my flight to tomorrow. We don't play till 8:45. I looked at all the options. I get to land at 2:30. Plenty of time to get in. I had to pay the extra fee, which is fine. I changed my flight. It's my fault. However, I get a notice this morning that my flight has been moved to 7:30. So basically, I have got to go to the airport in my uniform and go right from the airport to the park. And that's tough, you know. And I get WestJet is not, it is embarrassing. Yeah. The problem is I know WestJet doesn't recognize that I have timed this out to be there in time for a game. They don't care. They operate a bigger system than what the Grand Prairie Pirates are doing. It's frustrating, though. It doesn't mean I don't get to give them a shot. You know, willy-nilly, just changing travel plans. It's challenging, you know.
Are you flying to Calgary?
No.
Hey, are you going? It's direct?
Yes.
Okay. But you're like that Mites hockey player that dresses at home?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm coming with my carry skate guards and everything.
Your shoulder. Yeah, take your bat. Yeah. Can't even take your bat on the plane. Just make sure your gloves in your carry-on.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, Corey Jones on the same flight, so that's fun. So
can I ask a question? Yeah. Why don't you just find another hotel room?
Well, no, I could have, I suppose.
Like, why couldn't you just booked another room? Like,
yeah.
Oh, well, no, we don't have a room. That you pick up your phone on your phone. Hey, can I get a room?
I guess my fear was, and you had your shot, so just a second.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, he didn't. He's actually taking it at you right now.
Oh, okay, fair. My thought was, I didn't sound like anybody else was going in on Thursday, so I wouldn't have had any.
Oh, okay. Then it would have been.
And I don't like to be alone. I'm a creature of habit, and I do enjoy the camaraderie you get to build, and it would be weird to go to the Cactus Club by yourself, and it would be weird to get an Uber by yourself and sit in your room by yourself. I could do that at home. And that's what I chose to do.
Makes sense.
So, I thought that was a wise move, Dean. I can't believe you called me out on it. I suppose I could have,
I just, now that you've got a little bit of a conundrum with getting in at 7:30, I just thought, what's another option?
And we have heard, we've had many times on this case, we've had the story, the ongoing theme, if you will, of you changing your travel to stay home a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. travel in snowstorms, travel at 4 a.m. It's any lean on you to do that? Not one time?
Nope, not one time.
Okay, there you go.
No, okay. And she was my wife was going to come, and then she found out all the other wives aren't going. So she's like, well, I'm not going to go. It'd be boring. So I made this call. The good news for me is Corey Jones is arguably our best hitter, and I'm on the same flight as Corey Jones, so I feel like it's good.
Somebody's going to be there to pick you up.
Yeah, you betcha. Yeah. Donnie might get forgotten. Corey Jones with Donnie plus one? No. No chance. Yeah. So my man,
it's another fellow with some cool hair. Jonesy.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I saw a picture of him on Facebook this week doing his favorite Trump impersonation. What was that all about?
Yeah, what was that?
I'll ask Jonesy. I'll ask him in the gardens. He's a man of he's a man of mystery.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Just leave your hat on, bud.
All right. Jen, I noticed you went off camera for a second. Did you have to prepare your shot or where are we at?
Donnie, when we get off this Google Meet, you should Google what emotional catharsis means.
Okay. I will do that. I like to learn.
Everybody,
say that again.
You're having an emotional catharsis about your arrangements emotional tomorrow. Catharsis. Here's my shot. I'm just kidding. I know not everyone's on camera, but I don't know if everybody.
Nice. Oh, awesome. Look at that.
Yes.
Did you bite it? Have you done the...
No. I had no bite.
She's holding up her gold medal right now, and it's like thick.
What color?
Oh, sorry. It was bronze. It's gold in color, but it's a bronze. Okay.
Yeah.
But it looks gold.
Shot is, Donnie, look up emotional catharsis. But in all seriousness, thank you guys for having me on. This has been fun.
Yes.
Yeah, it was awesome having you, Jen. Very good. Thanks for coming on. And I'll see you a little bit this summer, but good luck with the transition. And I know it's going to be hard, especially one of the hardest things, I think, is the fact that they can't look to you to knock in the big bomb. You just got to stand there and hope for the best. Just hope that everything works out. Yeah, you have your days of control are over. Your days of having control are over, but it's everything we all go through.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, emotional catharsis is an emotional release.
Yeah.
For example, experiencing stress over a work-related situation may cause feelings of frustration and tension. And here, my next article that I will read offline is 7 ways to achieve emotional catharsis without having a meltdown. So very good life advice.
Awesome. Well, JSL, thanks again. Thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for asking to be on. This is fun. This is cool.
Right on. Say goodnight, Donnie.
Goodnight.
Thanks for listening to Tues Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloydminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.